Welcome to Inside the Studio, presented by iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Joe Levy. Hey, so I hope everybody's doing well out there, keeping safe, keeping healthy, and hearing lots of great music. All of those things are the reason that the Inside the Studio team put together this home edition of the show, to let you know how artists are coping with lockdown, how it's impacting their lives, and what it means to the way they make music now. This time out, our quarantine correspondent, Jordan Runtog, connected with Alex and Jack from All Time Low to talk about their new album, Wake Up Sunshine, which came out in April, around the time everybody realized quarantine was not going away quickly, which for these two guys meant ditching their sweatpants and picking back up their guitars. And after you finish checking out this episode, be sure to give a listen to the iHeartRadio podcast that Jordan hosts, Rivals, Music's Greatest Feuds, which is available wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guests today first started playing rock and roll together as teenagers in a Baltimore basement back in 2003. 17 years later, they are still rocking hard. They just released their eighth LP, Wake Up Sunshine, in April, featuring appearances by Black Bear and the band Camino. It's a return to their roots. If you listen closely, you can hear echoes from that Baltimore basement nearly two decades ago. I utter their name with reverence because, make no mistake, they are pop punk royalty. I am very happy. I am thrilled to welcome Alex and Jack from All Time Low.
Hey.
Thank you so much for being here.
What an intro, dude.
That was quite nice.
Only the best for you.
Oh, yeah.
On Jack's birthday, I might add. Jack's very kind to share his birthday with us.
Hey.
Hey.
Happy birthday, Jack.
Honestly, I love spending it with my friends and people who are lovely like you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I appreciate that. Oh, well, first and foremost, how the hell are you? How does quarantine life find you today?
I'm all right. I'm feeling quite good.
Feeling good?
The sun is shining. And things could be a lot worse. So I'm content.
Honestly, like, I feel like at this point, quarantine, like, I'm scared to go back to like normal life. Like, I'm used to quarantine life. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that feels normal to me.
I like my house now.
Yeah. Yes.
I like my safety bubble.
A generation of agoraphobes, right? Is what we are all now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Alex, you're on a farm, right? That's like, I've been 15 years in New York City. That's the most exotic thing in the world to me.
Yeah, man. We live out in the middle of the sticks. So we're sort of like, we're just surrounded by nature and woods and deer ticks. But no, it's great, man. It's really nice here. We are lucky and very blessed to sort of be in a position where the quarantine has not made our daily lives feel that much, that claustrophobic, I guess. You know, we're able to get out and, you know, get some air, and we're like sort of in our own little safety bubble here, which I'm very grateful for right now. But yeah, things are, it's fun. It's fun. We got a bunch of animals. We got horses. We got goats. So they keep us pretty busy, keep us on our toes.
Oh man. Were any of the animals from the Sleeping In video yours? Like the tiny horse?
I wish. In fact, that day, the day that we shot the Sleeping In video, I actually asked if the horse was available for rescue. Because we were working at an animal rescue in Nashville with the sole purpose of trying to get that place emptied out. And obviously the horse, they do not house many horses at that facility, but they brought one in and I was not sure whether or not it was one that was actually up for adoption. And I did ask, but this one had an owner, which I was dismayed to find out because I would have taken him home.
Do mini horses, like, do they have health issues, or are they like just like a normal horse but just smaller?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like anything where they get weird stuff.
Yeah. That'd be like super cute to have one of those, and yeah.
We thought about it. We talked about rescuing like a mini donkey or a mini horse, but it didn't come to pass.
Mm. What's that old saying, never work with kids or animals? Were they well behaved on the set?
Dude, I'm honestly like...
The cat was not.
Cats are the hardest. Cats are... We've worked with cats twice on videos, and they are very difficult because we all know how cats can be. The show stops for the cat. You know what I mean? Like everything suddenly... The entire production revolves around whether or not the cat feels like doing the thing that it's being asked to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are not ever going to bring any discomfort or harm or anything to the cat. So it's really like... It really is. There's no way to like... coax it into doing something. You just, it either does it or it doesn't.
Yeah, you give some treats
and you just
maybe,
have to kind of, you just kind of have to wait to get the take. So yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's actually, we've worked with animals a lot in music videos. And in the earlier days, I didn't think twice about it, never really worried about it. Then I got to a point where I was becoming a little more aware of like some of the things that these animals go through in show business. And it made me feel a little bit icky. And I didn't love doing it until we came up with this premise for this sleeping in video where the animals were wonderful to work with and amazingly trained and were under great care. And B, it was for an amazing cause. It was for getting a bunch of animals rescued, which we all in this band feel very passionate about. So it was pretty cool.
Oh, that is awesome. How have you been feeling? Just I know a lot of people in quarantine, I feel like half the people I know are feeling super creative and productive. And then the other half are just really like, what day is it? I don't know. Maybe. How have you been doing? Are you feeling super creative and productive?
Personally, the first 3 weeks of quarantine, I was like, okay, this isn't, how long is this going to last? What am I going to do? I decided I'm just going to watch movies that I've wanted to watch my whole life and haven't seen. So I made like a list of like 50 movies and I got like really close to hitting them all. So like it was straight up just watching an insane amount of movies. And then it got to the point where I was like, okay, we have a record coming out because this is before the album came out. We have a record coming out. This may last forever. Like I need to at least personally do something that's a little more fulfilling or else I'm going to actually go crazy. And when this is over, I'm going to look back and be like, did I just waste like 4 months of my life? So I started taking music lessons with an old friend and kind of, you know, going back to why I fell in love with playing guitar in the first place. And I started reading more and doing all these things that I don't think I would have done without quarantine.
Wow, so, yeah. That's awesome.
Began enriching his life.
Yes. Learning how to cook. I was hitting up Alex for like cooking advice.
Yeah, man. You got creative in the kitchen. I was proud of you. Like I had never really seen you cook much before. And then all of a sudden you were making these amazing looking dishes. I was like, yeah, let's go, buddy. Let's go.
Thank you.
What's been the most successful one? Most successful dish?
I guess most successful tasting was this bolognese my sister gave me the recipe for, which is actually bolognese is so easy. Like it's really easy. You just like put a bunch of stuff in a pot and just wait like a couple hours, but,
wait a day.
Yeah. It was really good.
Bolognese is always better the next day.
Yes.
You got to let it cool down and then heat it back up. And there's something about whatever happens in that process in the fridge overnight just gets even tastier. You know, it's really interesting because, I, at first, kind of like what Jack was saying, like I kind of settled into the idea of, all right, we're stuck at home and I don't have any responsibilities anymore. And I'm just going to wear sweatpants and, you know, turn the lights out and close the curtains and not leave my den. And after about a week and a half, 2 weeks of that, I was like, I need structure. I need something. And, you know, between all the farm stuff that we just talked about and then like just needing some kind of creative outlet, I think, you know, I did find myself picking up the guitar and going back to sort of these very, like, almost felt like getting back to the beginning, you know, like when I would be in my room alone, sitting on the bed, like recording demos, and just coming up with ideas. And suddenly that started happening again. And there's something very interesting about that because having been in a band for 17 years and having made 8 records in so many different ways, that sort of back to basics approach is not something that we've really done a whole lot since the early days. And so it's kind of cool now to come full circle and, you know, think about writing songs in a way that is just very DIY and like, you know, what I was doing in high school.
Well, for Wake Up Sunshine, you guys rented a house, right? Like out in the, Palm Desert? What was that experience like for you? I mean, that almost sounds back to basics to me because that was the first time you'd done that since 2009, right? Like nothing personal, yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely was back to basics for us. I mean, we had not made an album in that way since probably So Wrong It's Right, if I'm being honest. I mean, Don't Panic, we did the majority of the record with Mike Green at his studio in California. But the idea that all 4 of us were under one roof living and like eat, sleep, breathing these songs and this music together, it was a shared experience from the moment these songs were conceptualized to the minute we finished recording them. And I think, yeah, it just lended something so good and so pure and so like a very unique energy to the creative process, because it's something that we hadn't really tapped into for many, many years. And I think it just refreshed us. Like it was like hitting a reset button on the band. It kind of made us look at everything from a different perspective again. And it really refreshed, I think, our take on our band and our music.
I mean, just living in that house, I'm picturing like The Monkees directed by John Hughes or something like that. Like it seems like, what was it like when you weren't recording or working on music? Was it fun?
Yes.
It was very fun. It was very comfortable. A lot of, you know, it basically was like tour, but like way more comfortable because you didn't have to wake up in a different city every day. It was a lot of, you know, we had an amazing backyard. We made sure that if we're going to live in a house for a month, it's really nice. And luckily, you know, Palm Desert's not that expensive. And it was about 110 degrees out every day. So there wasn't too much going outside.
We went during the time of year where everybody leaves Palm Desert. So yeah. The rental prices were so cheap. So yeah, we got a good amount of house for we didn't dip too far into the record budget on that one.
It was smart though. And I guess our manager was like, oh, I'll put them in the desert in like the middle of summer. Like they're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, they're stuck. So it was good practice for quarantine, really.
Yeah, there was no distraction because you literally could not step outside of the house without the soles of your shoes melting to the pavement.
Complement each other as songwriters. What does the other one bring to the table?
I tell Jack he's really good looking all the time. That's how I compliment him.
Yeah. And then he goes in a closet and writes the song, comes out, here, I got it. And I'm like, wow, I did. I helped. That's crazy.
No, this process was really, again, just thinking about Wake Up Sunshine, it was really complimentary. And I say that for between me and Jack, but also between the other guys as well. It was kind of everybody brought their strongest suit to the table. And it was really cool having everyone at their best throughout the process. I'd be sitting on the couch with my iPad and a guitar and a microphone and sort of like spitballing these ideas. And what was nice about that was that at any given moment, Jack might walk through the room or Ryan might walk through the room or Zach and be like, ooh, don't do that, try this. And just that sort of real-time feedback was extremely helpful in crafting songs that felt really true to all four of us. And I think, you know, in the past when it's just been me writing a full song and then taking it to the guys, they're always going to have input, but it's not in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not at conception,
yes,
I guess. And so there's something to be said for that spontaneity that I think really shines.
At conception of the song, there's so much more, I guess, room for it to grow and change and move in different directions when you're creating it, rather than, you know, going retroactively back and like being like, let's change this chorus. Then you kind of lose that magic, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Prior to recording Wake Up Sunshine, I know you both have been involved with other projects, Alex with Simple Creatures and Jack with Who Hurt You. Did that kind of prime the creative pump in a way for All Time Low? Did it kind of like flush out some of these other ideas and make you see things in a completely fresh and new way for your next project together as a band?
Yeah, totally. I mean, for me personally, it was a way for me to get some things out that I don't think would have fit the mold of All Time Low as well. You know, we're always going to write for ourselves, but at the same time, you know, 17 years into a career, you have to recognize that there's a bit of a brand and you don't want to completely alienate everyone that listens to you. So it's like, you know, we've always been given a pretty wide lane by our fans to work in. Like even when we've tried kind of more absurd, off the wall, different ideas, our fan base has come along for the ride, which is very gratifying. But, you know, for me, Simple Creatures was a means to be a little more out there and try some unusual things. Mark was in the same boat. We both wanted to explore some stuff that was not in any way kind of reflective of our other bands. And so, you know, it just allowed us to scratch an itch. And I think that gives you perspective when you come back around to work on the main baby, because then you're like, all right, well, I got this stuff out of the way. I don't need to try and force that into, you know, I don't need to try and force a square into a circle here. It also just gave me a lot of new tricks for the album that really helped out. And I think, you know, I don't want to speak for Jack, but as an observation I made was that, you know, Jack going and doing Who Hurt You was like, I think his writing chops just upgraded tremendously. I remember the first time Jack came in, you know, and we were starting to work on Wake Up Sunshine, it was just like, who is this guy? Who is this guy?
It gave me a new confidence, you know, to kind of say something. You know, it's it's like learning a new skill and kind of giving you the confidence to give input, you know, and be okay with hearing people be like, no, I don't like that, or I like that, you know what I mean? But I think it was important for when Alex did the Simple Creatures thing, I think it was really important, at least to me, Ryan, and Zach, for us to support him, because, you know, he was also starting a side project with, you know, pretty much the reason why we started playing music, you know, with Mark Hoppus. So that, I think, we felt, you know, really good about, because, you know, we were like, we're letting our boy go with our dad, you know, with his new dad, like learn from him. And yeah, so that was really cool.
I mean, not to totally fanboy out, but like, did it ever start to feel normal working with, you know, your hero, Mark Hoppus?
To be honest, yes, it did actually normalize. You know, I'll say this, I feel really lucky that I got to know Mark over many years, and that we did not work together until him and I were very much like friends first. I think if he had come to me before meeting me like years ago and been like, hey, you want to work on something? I would have just been sitting there like with my mouth hanging open being like, whatever you say, Mark. Yeah, I love everything you do.
Yeah.
And you know, that would not have made for a good or interesting project, I think. So the fact that, like, you know, we're friends, and it was amazing to be able to kind of sit down and work creatively on something together. Cause we'd tried so many times in the past. We'd written songs for All Time Low before that didn't end up seeing the light of day. And we collaborated on a couple tracks together. One, you know, Tidal Waves for All Time Low, he came and sang on that. And so there's always been these moments of creativity with Mark and I, and we'd always sort of like never fully, you know, punched through that wall. And, yeah, Simple Creatures just kind of was the culmination of many years of like trying to get it to happen.
I don't know if you would have had the confidence like 10 years ago to be like, I don't like that verse. He would have been like, you know what I mean?
it's hard to get to a point where like someone who inspired you to be in music to begin with, you can sit down in a room and be like, dude, I think that kind of sucks. Like, you know what I mean? Like you have to have that honest back and forth. And we have that now, which is good. Like we can keep each other, we can compliment each other rather than just be, you know, like rather than me being there like, we're not worthy.
So you have this new record ready to go, Wake Up Sunshine. It's upbeat, it's refreshed, 15 tracks. And then Corona hits. Touring and release plans all go out the window. A lot of acts like Lady Gaga and I think the 1975 actually delay their albums. What made you decide to go ahead and release yours?
We actually made this record knowing that the whole world is going to shut down.
So messed up. No. Just like...
It's absolutely insane. I don't think anyone could have possibly anticipated how this whole thing was going to go. We really just found that the idea of not putting out the music would be doing a disservice to our fans who were ready for it. You know, we had already announced that it was coming out.
We had music out.
As this was happening, everything was sort of starting to shut down. And we had that conversation like 2 weeks out with the label and everything. Like, do we push back? Do we delay this? Do we wait? And it just, the more we thought about it, the more we felt like it would be kind of selling everybody short. Like this was an album that, you know, made us feel really good and really excited and felt like kind of therapeutic and cathartic for us to make it. And so maybe some of that would shine through in the music for people in a really tough time. And we just decided that it was the move to put it out and to let our fans enjoy it and hopefully have it be sort of a safety net in all of this.
Looking back, I'm happy we stuck to our guns because, you know, we released a song in January and then a song in February and then March came around. If we would have, you know, delayed the record a couple months, you know, then those songs and the whole kind of anticipation for the record kind of dies, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that we stuck to what we felt in our gut was the best decision. And yeah, I'm happy we did that because, you know, people had something new to listen to, you know, throughout all this.
Oh yeah, people need stuff to look forward to. How have you been connecting the fans in the midst of all this?
We have tried a myriad of things, you know, everything we could think of that's physically possible in the current state of it all. I mean, Zoom calls have been huge. We've done like
Zoom concerts,
exactly what we're doing here, but with 300 fans all at once, playing some songs for them. We've been doing like weekly live streams, which have been pretty incredible. Jack and I actually kind of dug our podcast from
Crash
years back
test.
Out of the grave and renamed it and rebranded it. And we're doing it a slightly different way now. We sort of live stream record it and then it comes out as a podcast later. And that's been a really cool way for us to sort of connect with people in a way that's not just music focused, mm-hmm. because obviously, you know, our music is a huge part of it, and that's out there now, that's living out there in the world. But the other part of it for us and for our band especially, I feel like has always been our personal connection with the fan base. And so for us to be able to reach out and connect with people through the podcast Crash Test Live and through these streams, it kind of feels like being there in real life, which is the one thing that's missing from our lives right now.
Obviously, you can't tour, and I'm sure that's incredibly painful. So to try to help with the pain, I'm going to ask you this question. What was your biggest, most Spinal Tap-like tour disaster ever, or concert disaster ever?
I mean, to be honest, we've had a very real Spinal Tap moment before where it was during the filming of our Wembley live show. It was part of our DVD. It was one of our biggest headliner shows to date at that point in our career. And we were filming it all live. And there was this moment in the show where I come off the main stage and have to run through the inner workings of Wembley Arena to get to front of house to do a song acoustic.
I know where this
and
is
I
going.
And I literally had that moment from Spinal Tap where we took one wrong turn and we were suddenly in this like labyrinth of 100-year-old
tiny hallways
with tiny doors, and some were locked and some were not. And we would open one and there'd be like a person cleaning or changing or like making food for everyone that night.
Does anyone know how to get to the front of house?
Yes. And the whole thing was like before the show, you know, this was all being shot live. And it was like very expressly stated to me. It was like, okay, there's one thing we can edit. We can clean things up. Don't worry. One thing that really needs to hit on time is your cue getting to that center stage.
Oh, because God. The videos and everything lined up. And the funny part is, because
they had to flip all the cameras around and everything. Yeah. And it was just like,
instead of having like a professional like security or bodyguard who had like figured out the route before, we had like our buddy
New directions.
We had like our buddy Steve doing it, who's like our friend from high school. He was just like, yeah, I think it's this way. Like,
so I'm just tearing butt around backstage at Wembley for a good, probably a very long feeling 2 minutes.
Yeah,
it really wasn't that long in actuality, but that 2 minutes really dragged.
Yeah.
When it was supposed to be 30 seconds.
Well, now I'll go the opposite question. What was the most incredible onstage moment that you can remember?
Oof.
It's got to be many.
I mean, in a weird way, probably that show too. I mean, that show was so like pivotal for us. Jack, yeah. I feel like
I was going to say, I think it was 2 years ago, they did the end of Warped Tour, like the last Warped Tour.
Yeah.
And they invited us to play a couple of the California dates. You know, Warped Tour was pretty instrumental in All Time Lows, I guess, everything really. You know, we've been doing it since we were like 17. And so, you know, it was going to be a really cool moment for us. We knew, and you know, a really cool thing to be a part of. And so they put us last on the San Francisco Warped Tour date on the main stage. And that was the day that, because of the venue, it was in the amphitheater, you know, so it was in like
this
Mountain View amphitheater, you know, which is like, you know, 15, 20,000 people and goes up like that. And so we closed out the stage and we closed out Warped Tour that day, and everyone was in there because we're the only band playing and all the bands were behind us on stage. And it was just this whole crazy moment for us to like, you know, I like almost started crying on stage. I was like tearing up and it was just very emotional. And, you know, one of those like, you know, this is where we started and now it's ending kind of thing.
Yeah, that was a very incredible moment. I mean, to like you said, to have the amphitheater was full of fans. I think everyone that was there that day went into the amphitheater to watch us play. And so it was packed out front. But then, to pretty much what felt like also the entire tour was behind us on the stage watching as well.
Kevin Lyman and everyone.
Kevin Lyman, everything. It was cool. It was a really special moment. And it was, yeah, like Jack said, the fact that that's where we sort of got our start to then sort of be able to close out that date that way with everybody. And, you know, so many of the staff on that tour had been there for years. And so there were people that we hadn't played Warped Tour for years at that point, but like to go back and see a bunch of old friends that we had toured with in years past and things like that was really, really special.
Oh man, it's got to be moments like that you got to think. Like, this is a long way from the basement.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. We have so many of those moments. It's mind-blowing. It really is.
Well, speaking of your early days, one of my favorite songs on your new album is Basement Noise. I just think it just really throws it back. Tell me a little bit about those early days. What does that song mean to you?
We had never really reflected in a song about our earliest memories of a band, of being the band, you know, and like it was cool the way that song came to be, because Jack and I had spent most of the day working on another song in the studio with Zach Cervini, our producer, and it was probably like 2 a.m. And we sort of hit a wall with this other song we were working on. And we were like, look, we got to get something, even though it's late, even though we're tired and we're burned out, we got to get something tonight to walk away with that's like a success, a win. And so we shut down that old session and opened up a new one and started writing what would become Basement Noise. And like Jack and I were sort of working on the lyrics. And as we were writing, we realized that it was this like self-reflective story of how him and I met up and got together and started writing songs for the first time. And
yeah, in Ryan's basement. Yeah.
It was a really cool way to sort of reflect on that and pay tribute to the fact that we sort of were making this record in a very organic way that was very reminiscent of the way we made records back then.
What were your goals back then in the basement? Like, what were you looking towards?
We would play these shows locally. We're like at a church hall, and it was basically about like being the band that had the biggest crowd, you know, like bringing like the most kids from your high school to come. So we were very much like trying to like, I feel like, impress girls, you know, like the same thing everyone starts, the same reason why everyone starts a band is to impress a girl or a guy. I feel like in the beginning, at least for us, that's personally what a lot of that was like that. I mean, it's high school, you know what I mean? You're not like, oh, we're going to go out and tour and make money. Like, no, that's not really what you're thinking about.
Yeah, we certainly weren't thinking about money. We were like, if anything, we were losing money because we were like, you know.
Losing our parents' money, rather.
Exactly. Cutting grass to go play shows on the weekend is pretty much what it came down to. Oh. But yeah, we were like, you know, it was back then it was really... I felt like we were very lucky because in Baltimore, there was this really budding local scene at the time. There were a few bands that were a little bit older than us, like a band called Adelphi comes to mind, who sort of got signed to
Drive-Thru Records,
yeah. Which at the time was like a really impactful label from our scene. And, you know, they sort of set the tone for bands in our area to sort of aspire for that next level.
Good Charlotte, sorry to interrupt. Good Charlotte was kind of like the first where like, we're like, oh shit, we can do this.
I mean,
yeah.
But there was definitely, Good Charlotte was definitely a huge one. They were kind of already on their way to being largely successful before we kind of started having any kind of significance. But like, they definitely set the path and set the goal for us to be like, okay, there's more out there than just playing the one local venue that we have here or whatever. It was kind of like, let's start reaching out to bands in Pennsylvania and New Jersey and New York and trying to drive a few hours to play some shows at these other VFWs and other church halls and get in front of people. And that, I think, is what instilled in us the idea that it could work when people started to come see us from far away or what felt like far away then. It made things much more real.
Man, you guys should run some like band team building workshops or something. Like, what's been keeping like the interband dynamic so strong after like all this time? You guys seem like the bestest friends. It's incredible.
Good question.
I mean, I think the biggest thing that I always pay attention to with our band, and I'm very grateful for, is that we really treat it like a family. We treat each other like family. It's, you know, there's never, it's not one of those things where when there's a disagreement, the like three of us go, let's gang up on that one person and make them feel terrible for having an idea. You know, it's always been about respecting everyone's thoughts and feelings and checking in and making sure that everyone feels spoken for and heard. And I think at the end of the day, what it comes down to is just nobody's let their ego get in the way ever, really. It's never been about one of us. It's always been about the four of us, which, because without one of us, this doesn't feel like All Time Low. So yeah, I think we've just always looked out for each other and made sure that everybody's in like a good mental space throughout all of it. And yeah, we just always check in and treat each other like the brothers that we are at this point.
I think it's because of our roots. You know, we grew up together. We went to high school together. We grew up knowing each other's parents. And I think because we built like this high school kind of groundwork in, you know, it made going through life and the success and the no success and the ups and downs, it made it all so much easier.
I'm telling you, band team building Zoom conference calls.
Let's go.
It would work. It would work.
Let's do it.
It's so great. I mean, do you guys keep in touch a lot when you're not touring? Like, what's your group chat called? I got to ask.
Ooh, we got a couple.
Which one? We have so many. So the one from the creative process of Wake Up Sunshine is called Analog Warmth Boys. And it's because... We started referring to everything we were doing on the record as analog warmth, even though I don't think anything we did on the record was actually analog.
We have a group chat that we started for Alex's bachelor party like 6 years ago. He's been married for a couple of years, like, and it's still going strong. And that's all of us, band and crew.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. We do have a tour one that fires up every now and then. Obviously, like, we're not on tour right now, but a lot of our crew members are still active crew members for us when we do eventually get back on the road. So there's that one, and every now and then someone will fire into that one, being like, "I miss you guys." So yeah, there's a lot.
Aside from not being able to tour, what's been the hardest thing about quarantine for you?
Ooh,
I've loved it.
what?
I've loved it. other than not touring, it's been great. What's been tough?
I don't know. I mean, look, I feel really, really lucky that the worst of it for me and my family has been that we're bored.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think there are so many people out there that are really in a bad way because of everything that's going on, be it financially or career-wise mm-hmm. or health-wise or whatever. You know, like, I continue to feel that we are very, very lucky to be in a position where the worst that we have is just a bit of boredom. You know, obviously, like, I hate not being able to see, like, friends and family as much as I would like to. You know, like, I have a family member who is immunocompromised, so, like, it keeps me from seeing them often and regularly, and I have to be really careful. So that part's obviously not ideal, but, like, you know, it's been fairly manageable for me personally, and you know, I've just been enjoying the time at home with family, because a lot of the time we don't get that. We're out on the road 85% of the year, most years. So this has been, like, the one positive thing to come from this, I think, is that we've gotten a little extra bonus time with our friends and family at home. But that being said, I also really miss being on tour, like, so much.
Yeah,
and I miss the guys.
We haven't played shows because we haven't toured in, I don't know, 2 years now. And, like, this was supposed to be our year back to tour. So really missing the touring.
I know it's very early days on the music we're working on, but what can you tell us about it so far?
About new music?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've already had conversations about the fact that, you know, we put an album out during a time that we can't be out there promoting it and playing it for people. So by the time all of this is behind us, it may be time to put out more music. You know what I mean? Like, that could be a reality, and that's a reality that we've never really had to deal with before. So we're already having those conversations of, like, all right, when can we get back in a studio and start cooking up some more fresh ideas so that when things open back up and we can get out there and play music, it still feels fresh and it still feels new for people. So, I mean, it's very preliminary right now because obviously we're still kind of really excited about Wake Up Sunshine. But I think, you know, sooner than later, there will most likely be the four of us in a room again trying to make some new music.
Yeah, now that we know that, you know, writing together with the people that we wrote with and made the record, and we know how successful it was, you know, personally and, you know, with our fan base, I think that we're going to kind of get back to that and see what comes out.
Yeah, there's more to tap into in that process, I think. You know, it was a really refreshing one for us, and I think there's more that it can offer us creatively.
So here's a hypothetical, a fantasy hypothetical. You snap your fingers, pandemic's over. What's the first thing you do? Just that person you hug, thing you go do, trip you want to take, what is it?
Ooh.
Oh, man. I would give my parents a big kiss. Because I've been like, every time I sort of see them, it's like the weird half hug thing. We're like, oh, we're being careful. So I'd give my parents a big kiss. And then I would Airbnb another house somewhere, maybe back in Palm Desert. And I would fly all you guys in.
Let's go.
And Zach Cervini. And we'd make some more music together.
We were supposed to be on Sad Summer Fest soon, which is a summer tour we were going to do. So I'd probably go straight to that. Fire it up.
Yeah, that's a good one.
We moved it to next summer, which is going to be great, but let's push it another year forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Move it back
into
place.
Move it back into place.
Get us on tour. Exactly.
Oh, man. Alex, Jack, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio Home Edition, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio and other shows from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.